So, hey, everybody, this is Eric Mann. You're on with Voices from the Frontlines, your 4 o'clock drive time, walk time, bicycle time, public affairs hour on KPFK 90.7 FM.
Voices from the Frontlines is a show about people trying to make social revolution, which means people on the front lines of the battle. It's not primarily about people who are thinking about things or talking about things. It's about people who are doing things.
This Tuesday, May 14th, and Ashley Franklin's going to give you the time, there's one of these great opportunities to, again, intervene in history and make something positive happen. Ashley Franklin from the Community Rights Campaign, let us know what it is.
Hi, Eric. Thank you so much for having me on the show again. This Tuesday around 12 p.m. at the LAUSD School Board, that's 333 South Beaudry Avenue, we're going to have a major vote on the School Climate Bill of Rights. And basically, we'll discuss it a little bit later, but it discussed willful defiance, getting rid of that as a suspendable offense, as well as eliminating and reducing the role of police officers inside of our schools. So it's 333 South Beaudry Avenue at 12 p.m. on Tuesday.
We can take a little bit more time now and come back to it. So what's obviously the Community Rights Campaign has done a really brilliant job about fighting the daytime truancy. But it's almost like, well, now lest students get a ticket on the way to school, now they get harassed in school. Why don't you explain why is this so important? What are the existing policies that you're trying to change?
Okay. So, you know, instead of just looking at the criminalization inside of our schools, we're also looking at the ways that students are being pushed out through suspensions and expulsions. So willful defiance, which is a category that students are suspended under, actually made up 40% of the suspensions. They use it as a tool of pushing students out, right? And willful defiance isn't clearly defined. There isn't anything on paper that defines it. But what we see and how it's practiced on the ground is students who roll their eyes or disagree to do their work are pushed out of school through suspension. And it's a tool that, you know, teachers who may not want students inside of their classroom can use to get them out of their classroom. Or if people don't want them inside of their schools, they can use it to push students out of their schools. And as you could imagine with willful defiance, the majority of the willful defiance suspensions has been black students, black males in particular.
Black?
Males in particular.
Black males. I just want to talk a little bit about that, Ashley, because Ashley and I are in the same organization, the Labor Community Strategy Center. We just had a phenomenally successful 24th political party, annual political party, 350 people, wall to wall. We had to get extra tables, extra food, so many high school students, so many bus riders. It was really a pleasure. And I gave my talk, it turns out, on willful defiance and the whole issue of trying to break the back of black and Latino students who would be in any way defiant, and that how much the culture of the 60s was trying to encourage people, you know, stand up, stand up, stand up for your rights. Well, that's
right.
Defiance. So how does the system manage to take what we were saying is we wanted young people to be not defiant, but more assertive, more clear. If a teacher says something you don't agree with, maybe you do roll your eyes, you know. So how are you trying to organize students now to address the pressure on them to not be defiant?
Yeah. So I think we can just take it back a little bit further, right?
Okay,
and
sure. And
at the political party, which I thought was amazing as well, I asked the crowd, you know, do you want the social welfare state or do you want the prison, police, and war state? A simple question. Whose side are you really on? And I started off the conversation with that because in each of the taking action clubs that we run as the Community Rights Campaign or any presentations that we do at the high schools, that's the first presentation we do where students envision a world where there is a social welfare state. And you would be amazed at the things that they draw, such as open spaces and housing for everyone, and having schools that felt comfortable for everyone. And then it's kind of shocking how easy it is for them to envision the prison police state as well, right? They have helicopters. They have a lot of police. They have a lot of gates. They have just making it inhabitable. And so for many of the students, after we do that presentation, I ask them, which one do you feel like you live in the most? And all of our students will point to the prison police in War State. And so it's amazing to be at the political party where people are in agreement that we need a social welfare state, as well as our students who are jumping on the agenda that that's what we need to work on, right? So for our work, I know that we recognize, you know, if we give out the landscape of what we're organizing in right now, we have students in Boyle Heights, we have students in South LA, we have students in the Valley who realize that we have the largest school police department in the nation. They have a $50 million budget. They gave out over 40,000 citations and arrests in 4 years. And 40% of those citations went to 7 to 14 year old students, right? And 93% of those citations were to Black and Latino students. So given that climate, students know that they have to basically get up and decriminalize student discipline, as well as decriminalize student tardiness and truancy, right? So those are the things that students are fighting for.
Well, your talk was pretty wonderful. And like you said, it was also great. I mean, from the minute you walked up there, there was a whole lot of students who knew you and were proud of your work. So that's always fun. And I think you're right that we're trying to decriminalize Black and Latino life.
Yeah.
So given that the Strategy Center does what we call campaigns, you know, we pick a demand, and then we actually, it's not an easy-to-win demand. It's a structural demand that goes against counter-hegemonic, against what the system wants, both ideologically and structurally. Tell me the story of this School Climate Bill of Rights, and how did it end up on May 14th? And so how did it start, how did it end, and how do things look for the actual vote?
Okay. So the School Climate Bill of Rights was basically a culmination of students who came together under the Brothers, Sons, and Cells, which is a coalition we're a part of, and basically realized that our Black and Latino males are being pushed out, as well as we see it happening in life. They're the main ones that are being incarcerated as well. So they wanted to provide a space of leadership for them. So they looked at some of the ways that they're being pushed out of their schools and created 7 points of how they can see themselves being protected inside of their schools. So that's how you came up with the School Climate Bill of Rights. And so with the School Climate Bill of Rights, it, as I mentioned, has two major things to it. It has the willful defiance, so getting rid of suspension for willful defiance, as well as a second piece, uplifting, restorative justice, and positive behavior intervention support, which are two things that look at root causes of student discipline that isn't punitive, as well as it really restores discipline back into the hands of school administration. And I think that's important because, you know, I had one student to reflect to me, you know, when I see officers inside of my campus and when you decide that you want to put more officers inside of my campus, as a Black male, I have to question myself, are you putting officers there for my safety or do you see me as a threat to safety? And this is not just one male story. This is probably all male stories inside of our schools. So the School Climate Bill of Rights is trying to address this. We see it as a down payment to a much larger thing, which is really restricting the role of our school police, interaction with our students, and creating true accountability of our school police on campus.
Well, in the truancy campaign, we were trying to, if possible, end the whole daytime curfew campaign, which we weren't strong enough to do, but we were able to radically change the enforcement of it. Now, what the LAPD said in that campaign, we know what you're trying to do. You're trying to restrict the scope of our work. Is this campaign also trying to restrict the scope and authority of the police?
Yes, absolutely, yes.
Why don't you explain to our listeners how that's going to happen if you win?
Yes, so if this is passed, right now we have 3 votes. We need 4 votes, so we need you all to come down to LAUSD. But if this is passed, again, it supports putting more counselors and restorative justice facilitators inside of schools, opposed to having our school police officers address school discipline. So again, it's one of the ways to take away some of their power inside of the schools and really trying to eliminate their roles inside of school. So it's a down payment to what we're envisioning, which is the next step, which is the Equal Protection Plan that really delineates what is their role on our school campus, if any, at all.
Well, we're going to come back to the Equal Protection Plan probably next time because I don't want it to compete with the School Climate Bill of Rights.
Although, of course.
But what she's indicating, folks, is, hold on. What Ashley's indicating is every step we have another step coming behind it. So this is the Equal Protection Plan is even a more radical sense of student rights, and you and Manuel and others will be back on the show to talk about that. I realize that one of the things I'm interested in is why don't you tell us the three votes you definitely have. Mm-hmm. Tell us how many members are on the school board, which I don't know, I should. Tell us all the other names, if that's okay, of who else is on the school board. And what can our listeners do to call either people on the fence, to support people who are going in the right direction, to let them, you know, sometimes we're so busy yelling at the ones we don't like that we forget to support the ones who are doing the right thing for us. So why don't you walk through, and you can go slow, each member of the school board, where they are a little bit, and where you think the fourth and fifth vote might come from.
Yes. So the Student Climate Bill of Rights is going to be introduced by President Garcia, who was integral in the passage of the daytime curfew amendment. So she's carrying it out. And the second supporter in that is Ms. Nuri Martinez, who represents the Valley as well. And then the third vote, that these are the votes that we do have, right, is Steve Zimmer, who's the Westchester area. So those are the three main votes who are yes, and they're supporting it all the way.
And one thing I wanted to comment on that, Ashley, is that just to be clear that when we're at the MTA, the Los Angeles MTA, we start out with no votes. And it's very, very different being able to go in with people that are not saying, well, wait till I get there, I'll let you know. Or let me see how other people vote, I'll let you know. So in terms of Nuri Martinez and Steve Zimmer,
yes,
and Monica Garcia, we just can't thank them enough because we're walking in with three votes.
That's right.
To get the fourth.
Yes.
And I just, for those folks who do grassroots organizing, you're not often walking into a room with three votes.
No.
So with that terrific work you've all done, and big props to them. So I'm saying if you know any of those three, please call them up and tell them how important it is what they're going to do next Tuesday. Now let's move to the four. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
So the other vote that we're really hoping to win over is Ms. Marguerite Lamont. So Ms. Marguerite Lamont represents South LA, and I think she's really important given that she's the only black member on the board, and given that I am organizing at Mayor Arts High School, where there are 14% black students, but yet they make up 54% of the suspensions inside of that school. So
wow.
Given that, those statistics alone, and those statistics come with actual faces and real people,
right,
and our community members and our youth, we're hoping that she used that as an impetus to vote yes for the Student Climate Bill of Rights. At the moment, she seems to be very distant from the Student Climate Bill of Rights, but I think this is an opportunity for all of us to call her office, to come to the vote, to write to her, to ensure that we get that last vote from her, given that those are some of the conditions that's in her district.
Oh, there are people in her district. Why don't you tell, I mean, it's basically the South LA district.
Yes, it is.
Say her name again.
Ms. Marguerite Lamont.
Marguerite Lamont, right. And so people should be calling our office. One idea would be to call the Strategy Center and get the actual language of the School Climate Bill of Rights. You think that's a good idea?
That's a great idea.
So you could email Ashley. Tell us how to get it from you.
You can email me at ashley@thestrategycenter.org.
I think what's important about that is if you email her, ashley@thestrategycenter.org, she'll send you the language. And then you'll be able to walk in with these elected officials and say, this is what they're asking for, and they already have three votes, and you can study it. You'll feel a lot more comfortable because otherwise you may not know exactly what you're talking about, which I've had that problem. So that's exciting. Now let's get to the fifth, sixth, and seventh, although Is there any possibility that any of the other three were all three pretty aggressively against as of now?
I would say we have one person, Ms. Gladstone, who is also a representative in the Valley, who was sternly against the amendment of the daytime curfew law. And so I don't really see her as supporting the Student Bill of Rights. She's a former prosecutor. But there's still hope, right? But I think that there are two people that are really important. We have Kaiser, who basically was really strongly supported by UTLA to get into office, as well as Vladovic, who also is in the Valley, who was strongly represented by the community to get in office, and has traditionally and has voted for the daytime curfew amendment in support of it. And he has traditionally voted along with Ms. Garcia, Ms. Martinez. So we're hoping that Vladovic is our champion of the fourth vote.
Is there some sense from some in the UTLA that the student climate, the school climate Bill of Rights, restricts some of the power of teachers in ways that they don't like?
Of course. Given the conditions that our teachers are facing, when you have overcrowded classrooms and you have a student inside of your classroom teachers may not feel are acting in the appropriate way, willful defiance is a perfect way it's a perfect tool to use to get them outside of their school. So it does seem threatening to our teachers, but I do think that that's one wing of teachers. There are other teachers who realize that this is one of the main tools why they're seeing their students leave their schools, the main tool of why they see their students not being able to stay on top of their work because they're being suspended for this, for willful defiance. So they want to see it gone. So I think there's two sides to it.
Is Coalition for Educational Justice participating in this campaign?
Yes.
They are?
Yes.
Well, that's very important if you're listening out there because teachers are under a very, very difficult situation. And sometimes you have to have political consciousness because what you see is not necessarily what you get. So, you walk down the street and somebody steals your handbag. And it's not so much that you want to not necessarily call a policeman, but half the time the kid they're going to find is not the person who took your bag. And then they're going to give the kid 3 to 4 years for taking a bag that instead of just returning it. So sometimes even if the specific experience you're having is not one you'd like a teacher in an overcrowded school having a heck of a behavior problem or discipline problem, if you give away the willful defiance card, you're a better teacher. It just means you're going to be stuck. You're right. But I'm not going to be able to kick somebody out. I just have to solve that problem. So
that's
are teachers coming?
Yes, there are teachers coming. We're organizing our principals at our schools to come as well. Again, the vote starts at 12. However, given the politics of LAUSD and where it is on the agenda, it could actually be voted on around 3. So we're hoping it gives enough time for our principals and our teachers to get there because Tuesday is an early day, so they get out of school early. So we're hoping that they're all able to make it.
Well, when do you want... It seems to me that you have a rally first, because that you can guarantee, and then you have the vote, and you can't guarantee. Is there a time-certain rally?
So I think we're looking around 12 o'clock. 12 o'clock is a good time for the rally,
yes,
given that that's the time where you can go in and actually get a speaker card if you want to speak on the agenda item. So 12 o'clock, if you make it out there, we'll have drum and chant, as we usually do for every event, as well as then moving into the board.
Well, for our listeners, if you haven't done this kind of stuff, you're really missing something, because how a wonderful government is... not very wonderful. And if you go to a normal city council meeting or a normal MTA meeting or a normal board meeting, it's like business as usual. You won't know what's going on. But these are the times when people have a cause, have an issue on the agenda, turning people out to go in and stick around for the afternoon and watch the zigs and zags and watch the elected officials knock the ball back and forth and hide and come on out. In terms of asking for more activist organizing voices from front lines, this could be a really, really good opportunity for you. The way our website works, www.voicesfromfrontlines.com, Ashley's interview will be up by Thursday morning. And so you have all day Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday to send your friends to KPFK, to www.voicesfromfrontlines.com. And there'll be all kinds of information about how to get to the rally, numbers to call. But Ashley's giving you her email, which is very cool. She's a very cool person. So if you have her email, it should be very honored. Ashley@thestrategycenter.org?
Yes.
Okay, so we expect to have a lot of emails when you get home. Now, take it back a step about the campaign to free the U.S. 2.4 million. I'm here with Ashley Franklin, a lead organizer with the Labor Community Strategy Center and the Fight for the Soul of the City's Community Rights Campaign. You talked Saturday night about freeing the U.S. 2.4 million. Why don't you let our listeners get a sense of what you're thinking?
Yeah. So I think one thing in particular around freeing the U.S. 2.4 million is historically, right? When I think about Black folks in particular, right? If we have 2.4 million people in prison right now, 1 million of them are Black folks, 500,000 of them are Latino folks. It makes me think about, you know, the role that Black people have played in the U.S. in particular. When we were brought here, we were never seen as people to be integrated into society, right? We were used as workers, and we were thought of as expendable people. And that's telling through the history of slavery, Jim Crow, and now replicated in the mass incarceration of our communities. So when I think about freeing the U.S. 2.4 million, I think about bringing back humanity to the Black race.
Right.
So this is at the forefront of the community rights campaign, and we see that our unique intervention is at the school site level. And at the school site level, what we're trying to do is organize youth to fight against laws and policies inside of their schools that are criminalizing even our youth at a young age, and trying to get them caught up around the school to prison pipeline and funnel them into incarceration. Right? So that's why we say free the U.S. 2 million.
Well, since I've also been working on this for a lot of years, I think what's great about re-expanding our frame, because we've been talking about Free the U.S. 2 million since 2001 at the Strategy Center. We've been talking about the social welfare state, not the police state, since 1992. Mm-hmm. But I think what we're starting to understand is that we have to get people more excited that we really want to free the 2.4 million and that the school climate bill of rights can only be understood in its importance about freeing the U.S. 2 million, because the driving out of those kids is going to drive them out into what? Into pre-prisoning, you know? To understand mass ticketing as stop and frisk.
Yes.
You know, not just ticketing, but the fact that you're being pulled over even if you don't get the ticket. So I think trying to have the broader conversation with the community that the things that we're fighting for are part of a much larger strategy.
That's right.
That's why we support the Drug Policy Alliance with the decriminalization of marijuana, because there could be a whole lot of people freed that way. I'm here with Ashley Franklin, and we have about, I would say, 7 more minutes, and then we'll go to break. What's it like talking to young Black and Latino youth about being young and Black and Latino right now?
I think there's a couple of things, the environment and the conversation, right? So in talking to them, I think they do an amazing job in telling their stories about their experiences with police, and not simply just police, but setups of their schools. They talk about walking to school, seeing 3 police cars in front of their schools, and that's setting the precedent of their day. Going through their hallways, having overcrowded, you know, classrooms, as well as being stopped, asked, why are you late to school, you know? And then not only just being stopped, why are you late to school, but in a hostile way. Not, why are you late, let me try to help you, but why are you late, you did something bad, right? And so they're really good at explaining those stories and explaining what they feel.
Can I ask you something there?
Mm-hmm.
When they tell those stories, do they talk a lot about seeing themselves as an oppressed people? Or do they see themselves, I mean, obviously they know they're black and Latino, but is there more sense of, damn the system, you know, another bad thing happened to me, and I know it's a lot because I'm black and Latino? Or is there any sense of history or context?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very clear, especially at Manual Arts High School, where students are, they understand that their schools are a microcosm of the macro, which is their community. They understand that it's under-resourced. They understand that they understand that completely. And so for them, when they tell their stories, it's a part of connecting to their histories. I know that a lot of them are clear that, you know, their history isn't being taught in school at all. And so for them, it's, I'm telling my story because it needs to end. And I don't want these conditions for my little sister or my little brother. And I think that's what makes them gravitate to organizations that's on the ground and that's fighting back and pushing back in real ways. And not simply just fighting back, but have a vision of what it looks like to have resources inside of school, to not have policing inside of schools. Those are the things that students want to see, and that they vision for themselves.
Well, in your last couple of minutes, you know, we've been doing a lot of work. It's funny that you've been doing a lot of work in community rights about visioning and envisioning and imagination, and so have I, sometimes without the other one knowing the other one's done it. This fight for the soul of the city is clearly trying to up the vision of our people. Tell me how you're feeling about it, and almost how do you see it helping or not going back into the schools?
The vision that I see
for the fight for the soul of the city.
I think it's amazing to take back to the schools. I know a reflection from the students who did attend political party. They're really excited that it's not just the vision that they draw out in an activity, but it's something that we're fighting towards. So for me personally, I just think about a couple of things. When we say a social welfare state, not a prison police state, or no cars in LA, I think about clean air. I think about bus-only lanes. I think about spaces where our students feel safe to run around and play. I think about actual teachers and counselors inside of our schools with culturally relevant courses. And I think of students actually learning, not being docile vessels that needs to fill out A, B, or C, right? So for me, it's inspiring to go back to campus and want to share that with everyone, and organize people to it. I think that it's one of those moments where you realize that not only do you share this vision, that there are more people out there that share that vision, and we have a lot of work ahead of us.
Well, this is Eric Mann. I'm talking with Ashley Franklin, a very, very gifted organizer and orator and agitator and propagandist and political educator, and we just had a really good experience. I'm going to just tie up with this. One of the things I love about the Strategy Center is the combination of people that get to know each other through different cultural worlds. Like, how in the world do we become friends? You know, so there's Rosa Miranda and myself, Eric Mann, a Jewish man, and then there's Ashley Franklin. But the three of us did the collective brain experience where we spent about 2 weeks working on our speeches together. And we gave our talk Saturday night at the political party in the sense that it was one talk, you know, with three people giving the talk. So I'd like to end, I got a minute. What was the experience like for you? And then I'll tell you what it was like for me, and then we'll say goodbye, and I want to bring you back a lot.
Okay. That sounds great. To be honest, I was scared to speak in a room full of people. But, you know, that fear easily subsided when I realized that these were my people, right? These are black and brown working class people. This is my community that I was speaking to and I was speaking from, right? Everything that I said in my speech was something that I've either heard from the community, right? Through my organizing. So for me, it was exciting and I can't wait to do it again, and I look forward to next year. It's the big 25 for the political party.
Well, you heard it here, folks. Ashley Franklin said, I can't wait to do it again. You know that was a tremendous victory, seriously. And that's what Rosa and Rosa Miranda gave an amazing talk about No Cars, No A and her vision for No Cars. And Ashley talked about freeing 2 million people. Freeing, and we talked about a society with no drones. And with 5,000 buses on the street, zero emission buses, free 24/7 transportation, and the no greenhouse gases in LA, not just being for us, but being for all the people over the world who are saying to us, please stop your government's drones. Please stop your pollution. You know, we can't control the United States. And if you can't control the United States, then we have no hope. So I like working inside the United States. First of all, this is where I was born. This is how I understand it. But I've always been working against my government from the very beginning, from the civil rights movement. And we think we're just legitimate in this country as anybody else. But we see ourselves more as part of the third world. And I think black and Latino people do see themselves more as part of the third world. And we have tremendous historical opportunities. And right now, I think tremendous historical possibilities, because this system is going to hell, and I think the average person knows it. And I don't think many people want to defend it anymore. They may say it's the best you can do. They may say, but they're not saying it's the greatest country in the world. They're not saying, oh, yeah, there's a job if you just work hard enough, right? No. That's changed. What they're saying is you can't change it.
Yeah.
And I think we're saying, no, we really can. So a concrete way, folks, next Tuesday at the Los Angeles Unified School District, 333 Beaudry. But where is that, Ashley?
333 South Beaudry. So it's between Beaudry and 4th Street, right there on the corner. So right next to the freeway. You can't miss it at all. It's a huge, tall building.
Okay. And again, it's Ashley at thestrategycenter.org.